Welcome to the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast. This is the business consortium for all the key stakeholders who are tapping into the future of liquid trade finance. My name is Doris Kuninovich. Lovely to have you here again. We're in November, so that means we're wrapping up the year with all the lovely podcasts. But today, we have a wonderful guest in the studio. I'll be speaking with a technology-driven supply chain solution based out of Estonia. So if you're in the supply chain business, you definitely know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Supplier Plus. I've got here in the studio with me, Kasper Kagu. He's the CEO and founder of Supplier Plus. Kasper, lovely to have you here.
Hi, Torres. Pleasure to be here.
Now, Kasper, the last time we saw in Porto, Supplier Plus had just joined the TFD initiative. So I just want to use this opportunity as well to wish you a warm welcome to the TFDI.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be in such an esteemed group.
Oh, lovely. Now, let's kick it off with the journey of Supplier Plus. Now, tell us all about the brain work and the journey about starting this business.
Sure. So we basically came up with the idea 5-6 years ago when we initially launched, let's say, like a factoring product of a sorts based on our own need to the local market where we didn't have access to any cross-border deal financing. And so pretty early on, there came a need essentially to bring in the financial institutions also and make it a little bit more professional and then grow out of here to the Central Eastern European markets and the Nordics.
And what are the problems or the challenges that you'd seen that Supplier Plus could help solve?
Yeah, the local problem here where we started out was that it was relatively hard to get financing on deals which were basically cross-border. So you have core banks in their core markets operating fairly in a conservative manner. And if we weren't able to basically onboard or basically identify the other counterparties, then it was relatively hard to get financing for these sort of specific deals. And it started to be even more evident when we go outside the Baltics, the Nordics, even with the own countries of operations for these banks, that was a real problem. And this is what, let's say, edged us on to start this platform.
And obviously, when you're starting off a new business and looking at what the market was before, did you feel that Supplier Plus, or do you feel that Supplier Plus kind of supplements and complements what the traditional banking institutions already have? And how are you looking to close the trade finance gap based off your collaboration with them?
Yeah, it's definitely complementing. We had these discussions like whether we're actually competing in the some of the sectors, like especially when factoring itself is like dominating the market. So there we can see that maybe some of the clients we have touched, which are also the same for the clients. But it became really evident just as an example that we're already like a 30 people team, and for the counterparties who have essentially who are in the financial institutions, they have to cover with their whole team the whole desk and the whole variety of services, and so they pretty quickly took us in as a one of the selling arm or a cooperational partner to essentially enable to finance these transactions and do so with untapped market as well, because there's evidently the problem of always financing, let's say, the larger counterparties of the deal, but the long tail suppliers, like long tail companies, the SMEs are usually left out or have very unfavorable terms of financing.
That's a really good point you make, because when you get into this business, sometimes it does feel as though some markets will feel like you're competing. Can you tell me a little bit about how you were able to kind of smoothen things over to kind of show that, you know, Supplier Plus was really here to make a difference within the supply chain market and not just take away from it, but ease the process, the workflow for already existing banks that needed to get that help?
Sure. I think that the whole problem in the space essentially is threefolded, because you have three counterparties all put together. So the buyers are trying to solve their own working capital needs. The suppliers want to get, of course, paid immediately, paid in full, get the best price out there, or even find alternative financing, what hasn't existed before. And then, of course, for the banks, the view is like, how do we shift the risk and any sort of risk? It's not only credit risk, but how do you validate all the transactions involved? How do you do KYC, AML, which is, it's a growing problem throughout the industry, that how do you all do this? And maybe luckily so, but as we started out from Estonia, it was as a benchmark for us was that everything needs to be digital, and therefore we need to incorporate our solutions, what we can use here in the home market, and try to export that to other markets as well. So this is what I think differentiates us throughout the whole model or the industry, that we try to onboard all the suppliers ourselves, and therefore validating each transaction which is being made.
That's amazing. So let's talk about your clients now. What kind of clients are you looking to provide liquidity to, and in which geographies do you have, like specific regions, or you better placed in certain areas?
Sure. Well, regionally, we started out here in the Baltics with international buyers and the local buyers. And of course, if they have subsidiaries in other countries, that's been our organic growth model that we're looking into now: Poland, Bulgaria, Slovakia, Czech. So there's a lot of markets now like which we're entering and trying to solve the same problem for our clients, which is basically just throughout these geographies. But we try to position ourselves through the Nordics, through Baltics and Central Eastern Europe. We're also touching somewhat the boundaries of Southern Eastern Europe, but maybe we can have that conversation already next year.
And what kind of instruments are you providing to your clients?
It's mostly trade payables and trade receivables side. So we try to tackle the immediate problem first.
And you just touched on being able to use digitization now. This is like a big conversation around the trade finance community. Like in Porto, there was a fintech session. And, you know, you'd argue that 5-10 years ago, even less, you wouldn't find a fintech session or an area or a panel dedicated to technology and to promoting digitization. What, in your opinion, do you think has changed to change the perception of different financial institutions to see that this is quite important today?
I think the market itself has driven there, of course, throughout all the wave of regulations, which basically make all the crediting counterparties liable for all of this. This has created like a really big problem or a bottleneck, if you will, that now we need to solve it. And we actually do have the technology. It's just that the adoption usually has been relatively slow. It's the same what we saw that it's a great example that like with COVID, actually like everybody was forced to move into the 21st century. So this is what we're seeing now, what is happening even in these specialized niches, that how do you get more data, where is it transparent, and how do we all bundle it together to make better decisions? And so this is what has been out there. This is the problem, what can be solved. And now we do have the technology, it's just validating it all.
Mm. And what do you do? How do you promote adoption from your end? Obviously, there's marketing, there's presence in events and going out there and really pushing out the word. But what do you think has been the message that has really resonated with your clientele and perspectives when it comes to working with Supplier Plus?
We tackle the problem basically where the need is the biggest. So where you would have like large corporate buyers who are looking to extend their payment terms, and essentially there, like what the solutions could be for the suppliers. And then you can see that evidently, for example, in the construction sector, where the biggest players usually do get financing, but there are smaller counterparties are left out, and so therefore there's no other way to turn to these alternative solutions. And being a tech enabled company, then I think it's of course more digitally let's say approachable, but it's also of course a lot of it is word of mouth, that if you get a solution somewhere, then and if it's on par or even exceeds any expectations here, this is how we've been able to grow.
And I think that you do have like an advantage as well, having adopted this sort of digitization in Estonia. We're seeing with recent news of the electronic trade documents bill being pushed into Parliament in the UK, and people tend to know UK as one of the leaders for implementing new laws around the G7 or around the globe. How do you think this bill could potentially, if at all, affect how people and businesses perceive using digitization and technology for business solutions such as yours?
I think it's very important in a sense, like it's estimatedly 80% is still done in English law. So if that were to come through, then I assume it opens up a whole other avenues for each of the banks to adopt new solutions, because there was kind of a chicken and the egg problem that can you actually do that before, or if you need to double and have paper and digital trails on it, that doesn't make sense whatsoever, right? So if we unify all the legislation here, then I think it makes a lot more easier for throughout the space to do this. And so I'm sure that the adoption will be even more quicker in the future, because every company essentially will be a technology company. It's not only the banks, it's also the buyers and the suppliers.
Absolutely. It's 140 years a little bit too late, as some people say. Well, that's what we're looking at today, and we're hoping for the best in the next few months from the legislators. All right, if you're just joining us, this is the TFD Initiative podcast, where we have the CEO and founder of Supply Plus, Casper Kagu. We've been talking about an adoption of technology and digitization within the supply chain finance and with specific means to Supply Plus. Now, let's talk about your funders. Tell me about the kind of challenges you have dealing with funders, and what are your main expectations?
Sure. I think the main bottlenecks with the funder side is always the of course, like our own KYC, like where do you come from? Like if you're doing these sort of cross-border transactions, then how do you validate the technology? And for most of the markets, and especially if we're going into these Central Eastern European markets, then it's a novel technology for everybody to adopt. And then this is usually the biggest, let's say, obstacle to try to explain and show how the platform operates or the technology works behind it. But it's a fairly, let's call it a simple process. My background comes from banking, so I also know the procedures, what we need to go through. So this we speak the same language in terms of this adoption. But overall, I would imagine that it gets more unified in the future. And so therefore, we're able to bring these solutions way more quickly to the other markets.
Absolutely. And let's talk about your liquidity. Who are your liquidity providers?
So mostly we are financing or refinancing our pool of invoices with the bank's trade factoring units or trade finance units here, like locally and internationally. And now we're also hoping to pull together with TradeTech and then growing the asset class of trade payables throughout our region here.
And are you relying on any credit insurance yourself?
We do not currently provide credit insurance for that. This is all done by our counterparties, but we're looking into that space, like whether we can also provide, let's say, additional data and therefore actually de-risk it for all counterparties involved. So this is what we are definitely looking into.
Okay. And does that also tie into risk scoring transactions?
Yes. It does. So that if, by example, like the confirmation, what we get from the buyer's side directly through their either ERP or the files that are sent securely, then we also get the confirmations from the supplier side validating that transaction, getting the sale confirmation to us. Now, pooling that all together and then having each individual claim as a journey and being able to sell that to all the, let's say, end creditors, it is very important for all parties' sake here that it's all accounted for and everything can be tied down to or very transparently shown afterwards, that if there were to be some sort of risk mitigation case, then all of this data is actually on each party's app. Constantly at hand, so they're able to validate it without our presence even involved.
Yeah, and that leads me to the use of technology. You mentioned earlier on, you know, the collaboration with TradeTech. What, in your opinion, is the role of technology in your investment activities and your investment processes?
It's fairly big in the sense that, of course, like if we're dealing with numbers, most of it can be automated. And surely, we just need to make better decisions on the data that we have. And this is the thought process, what needs to be put together. But here in the space, throughout even the members here in fintech space and DFDI, that what we're seeing is the more interoperability, which is coming, especially, let's say, in ECG or impact investing side. This is definitely what we welcome with open arms, so that if we are in one space specializing in one product or a product group, then I think we would need even more cooperation for that to be streamlined and adopted way more quickly.
That's definitely interoperable. It is definitely the buzzword for 2022, if I may say so. So can you outline your use of TradeTech? Because obviously over here at TFDI, we want to ensure that, you know, everyone is standard setting and using digitization as a form of, you know, loosening up that liquidity within the trade finance distribution market. And TradeTech is one of the technologies that we know that promotes that. So what is your collaboration and your use within the platform?
So sure, we started earlier this year the potential cooperation with TradeTech, and now I think we are as far to say that we hope to be live already this year and then financing our, let's say, originated invoice through TradeTech. So we have high hopes for that, because again, coming from the private banking side, being on the other side of the table, actually buying into all of these alternative investments, I welcome open-armedly these sort of opportunities, because it's something which the market has been definitely missing with the negative Euribor being so long on the market that it needed to be created a valid asset class where asset managers can also take a look at and place some of the capital.
No, that's definitely important to keep looking ahead and seeing what's out there and what everyone's investing in and spending time on, because obviously that is the future, I would say. Now, let's talk a little bit about, obviously, as we've come into November now, we're looking back at the year a little bit to see how we have advanced this year, if we have advanced this year. And this year has particularly been quite a challenging one. I remember us getting into January and thinking about how businesses will survive through COVID. And then February, March came in, and then, you know, there was Russia, Ukraine, and then offshoot of that, inflation. What have you seen as a business leader within the supply chain solution? How has this impacted business in terms of trade distribution, in terms of adoption of new technologies to help advance already existing workflows? What have you seen?
I think the our geographical presence has been relatively volatile for that matter. So we've seen, I think, two, three mega trends happening, that of course the physical supply chain being shifted completely. So this created somewhat of a pent up demand, especially from the construction space, for example, here. And for cross-border, physical supply chains to now change the trade routes, this has been very impactful for starting new client relationships. So this is definitely one of the themes that we have interested parties in even financing that side, and of course, creating these sort of ties in between. But for the adoption side, it also has somewhat made, I want to say, some of the sector players even a bit more lazier, in the sense that inflation hit, everybody started hitting their KPIs way before. And so therefore, it was actually just servicing your own client portfolio and growing with it. So I think the numbers are super strong this year for everybody involved. But going forward, I think that's now the key element, that how do we grow the business from these huge benchmarks? So what happens in the next 12 to 24 months? So I think there's definitely a growing trend overall, but it's the few who are going to be very, let's say, agile in the space will for sure win the most.
I'm going to tap into your brains a little bit more about this 12, 24 months to come, because I know when I speak to people about this, they say, oh, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell the future. But obviously, you are seeing something, you know, with what has happened over this year. What is your prediction for 2023 based off the trends that we have seen this year?
Sure. I think the cyclical trend is here that if it's going, let's say, like if new money now is going into more in a protective mode, or we're seeing like the shift from some industries to others. So I would assume that actually retail will be very strong next year. Food processing, for that matter, as well. Agriculture is making a comeback, at least like our numbers are all showing so. So these will be the cyclical versions, but overall, like I'm an optimist by heart and mind. So I see us growing all together, even in the sector wise. So I remember from Porto actually that when the insurance guys were also saying that they don't see any deterioration currently on their portfolios. But then again, we were in September, so we have to look going forward. But I assume like it's a coin flip scenario that even if we go into a deeper recession, so what it does to the physical supply chains. So is it going to be more of a on paper value loss, or are we really going to see the slowdown of the economic activity? And I would assume that we're going to see some, but not a lot. Like we're not going to see 2008-09 again.
Definitely. I think I'm going to be with you on being on the optimistic side, because, you know, when there are a lot of minuses, there's some certain things that cancel it out. And it does drive a little bit of efficiency sometimes when we think that, you know, it's going to be a very difficult year. Well, I think that's about the time that we have today. It's been a really, really lovely conversation with you. I just want to say thank you so much for making the time to speak to us here at the TFD Initiative. Kasper Kagu, he's been our guest on today's show.
Thank you, Torres. Hope to speak to you soon.
Amazing. So that's our episode 19 done. And for everyone who's enjoyed this, you can stay in the loop of all our podcasts by subscribing to our channel on Spotify. That's the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast. And on YouTube, where you can watch this as a vodcast, that is in video version. Hope to catch you here again. I'm Doris Kononovich. Thanks for being here and have a lovely day. Bye-bye.